Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
America, welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Still on a bit of a high from the debate, I have to admit. I'm really enjoying the post-debate euphoria. Obviously, I don't want to be complacent. The election is far from over. But a lot of Democrats that were very nervous going into Monday night are feeling a lot better now. And I want to go over the debate. We didn't have enough time to talk as much about it as I wanted to yesterday. We had a ton of calls. Didn't get to all of them. I want to encourage you to call back at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-M-A-R-K, or for those of you who prefer numbers, 888-488-6275, and just go over what you felt were the most important parts of the debate and what the debate means for the future. To me, there were so many things that I liked, but a lot of it was, well, it just showed how extreme Donald Trump really is and how he's really unprepared to be president. Perhaps my favorite part of the debate, and I will play it again just because it is my favorite part, it's a great way to begin a debate, is it's E. I'm going to call out letters because that's what my producer has given me to nickname the clips. So this is my absolute, it's very short, but my absolute favorite part of the debate. Mark, can we play E, please?
Tell you, you look at the inner cities, and I just left Detroit, and I just left Philadelphia, and I just, you know, you've seen me. I've been all over the place. You decided to stay home, and that's okay. But I will tell you, I've been all over, and I've met some of the greatest people I'll ever meet within these communities, and they are very, very upset with what their politicians have told them and what their politicians have done.
I think Donald just criticized me for preparing for this debate. And yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
So that to me, that summed up everything about the debate, right? That was the heart of it right there. This is a woman who is prepared. And she's going up against someone who's winging it. And the irony is I actually said that Donald Trump would be winging it when I was on television just last week. I said, you know, this is a guy who wings it. And do voters really want a president who wings it? Or do they want a president that's prepared to be president? But even more than that, I think Hillary Clinton successfully raised a lot of questions about Donald Trump and, frankly, about his taxes. You know, he hasn't been willing to disclose his taxes, his tax returns, even though he promised to do that several times. He promised to do that if Barack Obama would give up his birth certificate, his long-form birth certificate. He also promised to do that as recently as 2015 when he told radio host Hugh Hewitt that he would release his tax returns. But Hillary Clinton is raising the obvious question, namely, if he won't release his tax returns, what is he hiding? And that's a really important clip that I want to play for you. It's somewhat at length. It's clip B. Mark, if you could play clip B, please.
Appreciating our trade deal.
The IRS has an audit of your taxes. You're perfectly free to release your taxes during an audit. And so the question, does the public's right to know outweigh your personal...
Well, I told you, I will release them as soon as the audit. Look, I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes. When she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted, as soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says, you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her
email. So it's negotiable?
It's not negotiable. No, let her release the email. Why did she delete 33,000?
Well, I'll let her ask that, but let me just admonish the audience one more time. There was an agreement. We did ask you to be silent, so it would be helpful for us. Secretary Clinton.
Well, I think you've just seen another example of bait and switch here. For 40 years, everyone running for president has released their tax returns. You can go and see nearly, I think, 39, 40 years of our tax returns, but everyone has done it. We know the IRS has made clear there is no prohibition on releasing it when you're under audit. So you've got to ask yourself, why won't he release his tax returns? And I think there may be a couple of reasons. First, maybe he's not as rich as he says he is. Second, maybe he's not as charitable as he claims to be. Third, we don't know all of his business dealings, but we have been told through investigative reporting that he owes about $650 million to Wall Street and foreign banks. Or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So if he's paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets, zero for schools or health. And I think probably he's not all that enthusiastic about having the rest of our country see what the real reasons are, because it must be something really important, even terrible, that he's trying to hide. And
now, there was a lot of that segment that's really important. Let's start with the fact of he still won't disclose his tax returns. Now, we all know this. We all know that every single candidate for more than 40 years has disclosed their tax returns. But he will not do it. And the question, as always, is why? What is it that he's hiding? But Hillary Clinton raises some interesting questions, because we know, for example, we know that Donald Trump has a lot of money owed to foreign countries, including foreign banks. In fact, the latest that we know is that he owes at least $650 million. We don't know who it's owed to, because he won't disclose his tax returns, but we know he owes the money. And we also know, for example, he does a lot of business with Russia. So how much does he owe Vladimir Putin? We also don't know his net worth. It could be that he owes his entire net worth or more. In fact, his businesses seem to owe, by one account, more than $2 billion. That's separate from the $650 million he owes. These are fair questions, because it's unusual, to say the least, for anyone in the United States government to be as supportive of the goals of Vladimir Putin as Donald Trump. This isn't a Democratic-Republican thing. I don't know many Republicans that support Putin's invasion of Ukraine, for example, or want to end NATO, don't want to help NATO. Donald Trump famously said on Monday night that he didn't really understand what NATO was. I'll get the exact quote, because I don't want to misquote him. I'll get that in the break. But in any event, he doesn't want to help our allies, despite the fact that NATO is a treaty. It's signed by the United States. Even if you don't believe that Ronald Reagan was right to try to win the Cold War, even if you don't believe that Poland and the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Romania and Bulgaria and East Germany, now currently part of Germany, if you don't think Germany was worth saving, and Hungary and the Baltic states, if you don't believe that human freedom is that important, and you don't think that having a peaceful, secure Europe outside of Russian domination is important, even then, it's a treaty. We're obligated to obey a treaty. What does it say if we're going to desert our allies because the Russian dictator happens to have a stranglehold over our president of the United States? Now, these are fair questions, and I got to say, I don't think it's a Democratic-Republican thing. I don't know any Republican that supports the reconstitution of the Soviet Union. Maybe you do. I don't. I can't think of one. And I certainly don't know of any Democrat that supports that. So these things matter. It'll be interesting to see how much in the next debate, the debate with the town hall format, how much he is willing to disclose. I don't think he will. I think, as Hillary Clinton said, there's something terrible there. But furthermore, and this I thought was astonishing, I think Donald Trump has a habit of saying things that come to his mind and not thinking before he says them. I think Sarah Palin has some of that habit. This is a guy who's worked his entire life not to pay taxes. And I understand, everyone wants to keep their taxes down. But the only 2 years for which he showed his taxes, as Hillary Clinton points out, he had paid none of them. And because he never paid his taxes, his goal is always to pay no taxes. So when Hillary Clinton said, I don't think he's paid his taxes, or I think it's quite possible he hasn't paid any because the two he's released show he hadn't paid any, he said, that's smart. That's smart. Well, I want to know if you, the American people, support policies that says that people who make hundreds of millions of dollars, and Donald Trump claims to be a billionaire, and maybe he is, we won't know because we don't have his tax returns, whether they should pay no taxes at all. Because Donald Trump's plan is to tax you more so that he can give billionaires even greater tax cuts. Apparently, zero is not enough. Not only does he not want to pay income tax, he doesn't want to pay the estate tax, which applies to very few people, but certainly would apply to his family. Does it matter to you that Donald Trump may have paid no taxes at all? And in fact, we know that at least on a couple occasions, he paid no taxes at all. Does that bother you? Does that concern you for a president of the United States? Is it okay that you're paying your taxes and he's not paying his? I think Hillary Clinton successfully took this issue, which was always sitting there, because after all, Donald Trump is the first candidate in decades not to release his taxes, and she put it in the forefront. For all those people that think Donald Trump's going to look out for the little guy, the question is why? This is a guy who has a history of taking from the little guy and giving it to himself. Give me a call. Let me know your favorite parts of the debate. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And we'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. What were your favorite parts of Monday night's debate? There are a lot of them. We'll be playing a bunch of them this hour. We talked last, before the break, about his tax returns. And there's an interesting article that's in the AP today, the Associated Press, that points out that Donald Trump has had no hesitation turning over his tax returns if it meant he was going to make a profit. In fact, he has turned over 8 boxes full of tax documents, at least 5 years worth, to Pennsylvania gaming regulators and those in Nevada, Michigan, Missouri, Indiana, and other state gaming officials. All of them were required not to talk about them or show them to anyone. And what's fascinating to me is that no one apparently has leaked this to the press. I mean, here, some Russian hacker, it appears, has hacked into Democratic National Committee headquarters, which is clearly a crime. And yet those have been turned over and cited, and no one seems to be prosecuting the people who did that. And yet this, Donald Trump's tax returns, what it just goes to show you is that the IRS and state tax authorities are apparently honest. Sorry, folks. The Republicans are about to impeach the head of the IRS, and still he won't turn over documents that probably show that Donald Trump hasn't paid taxes or is owed money to the Russian mafia. We don't really know. We do know that Deutsche Bank has lended him a lot of money, and Deutsche Bank is in financial trouble right now. But what were your thoughts on the debate? 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's start with Linwood in Charlottesville, Virginia. Line 2. How are you, Linwood?
Mark, I'm doing a pretty good job, and thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed the debate. Some people had some opinions about it. But me, when I looked at it, I was not really on the fence for Hillary. I was darn sure not on the fence for Trump. But what it looked like to me, it just seemed like she came in as, I want to do this together. I want us to do this together. I want to ride us up together. Trump just had this smug attitude of, you know, believe me, when I get in office, it's going to get done like that. Well, you need a Congress and you need votes. He just thought that he could just be a dictator about it all. But I also noticed something, too, as far as the support. There's a racial element, and yes, these are two white candidates running for this job. But there's a racial element in this country that he's invoked as far as the sense of the way they treat Hillary Clinton is far worse as they treated President Obama. They're treating her like she's a black lover or a Mexican lover with this sort of detest. And the way they speak of her is very vile and disrespectful. But this is this element that he's brought out.
I'll tell you, people forget. People have short memories. They said horrible things about Bill Clinton when he was president. The Republicans did, accusing him of murder and all kinds of crazy, ridiculous things. And then they said horrible, racist things about Obama. In fact, the leader of the birther movement was a certain Donald J. Trump, who spread these racist conspiracies even after he knew they were completely false. Of course, he probably knew it back in 08, but certainly after 2011, everyone knew these things were false. But he did it as a dog whistle, as a way to say, hey, if you're a member of the KKK, if you don't like the idea that someone of half Kenyan heritage should be our president, if you really don't like black people, come with me. It's safe. I'm going to help you. And that's why, by the way, Donald Trump has the greatest support among white supremacists of any candidate who's run in the last, 50 years or so.
Years.
Right. I mean, really, since George Wallace. You have to go back to George Wallace in the 1960s to find a candidate with that much racist support. So the fact that they're just trying to destroy Hillary and making up all kinds of lies about her, I got to say, as awful as it is, Linwood, I don't see it as anything new. I think they will do that about any Democratic nominee. They would have done that about Bernie Sanders or O'Malley or anybody.
Yes, I do agree with that, but just like when it comes to a woman, particularly and Hillary Clinton being a white woman, it was just so much vitriol. It was like when Rudy Giuliani comes out and says she's too stupid to be president, well, hell, she ain't stupid to beat this clown on the national stage and kept her composure, so how dumb can she be?
Well, I thought she did a really strong performance.
Policy.
Yeah, well, she knows policy.
She's going to do.
That's right. Well, she's a person of detail. And that's why I think she'll make a really good president. Thanks for your call, Linwood. Folks, if you want to join the conversation, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And we'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. The voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. I'd love if you check this out on Facebook, but first I have to get Facebook to work at facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. I'm trying to spread the news here. But I am a bit of a Luddite sometimes. So I will definitely take your calls. We're talking about the debate and what you found to be the most persuasive or non-persuasive part of it. What worked for you? What were your impressions of the debate? Did you notice how much Donald sniffed and drank water and fidgeted and seemed to be very upset? Clearly, Hillary Clinton had prepared for the debate. And Donald Trump had not, and it's interesting that those who even watched with the sound off seem to agree. Let's go to Bernice in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on line 2. Hey, Bernice, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I do want to say my impressions of the debate were Hillary was right on and Trump was a mess. And the only thing I wish Hillary would have done a little bit more was once in a while when she was talking about Trump or to him that she would have looked at him more. Because I think that really threw him off when she did that. But
well, it may be. You know, it's hard, to, I guess, to take that a little bit. So,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting because he's such a bully. I mean, his whole life is about being a bully.
Yeah.
I mean, even the fact that he was sort of sent to reform school as a kid, all the way up to this is a guy who his entire life has used his power, his financial power, to bully people.
Absolutely.
As Hillary pointed out, whether it's architects that he doesn't pay or the people who installed his marble or, you know, 3,500 people or the poor saps who thought they could learn something from him at Trump University and paid $30,000 just to watch a video. Or, heck, even if it's tax authorities, right, not paying his taxes and getting $800 million from New York State in taxes. This is a guy who's all about cheating the system and bullying others, and he couldn't handle it when he was being attacked himself.
No. And you know he's never been told no. You just know that. Like all the people around him are yes people, and he's never been told no. But I did have an observation I wanted to kind of tag on to your last caller.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I wonder if he was maybe trying to bring out the fact that when an ally of people who are minorities or, you know, of anybody, when you're an ally to people, you are painted with the same brush and sometimes worse. And I think maybe that's what he was trying to get at. Because, you know, if you're a white person and you are working for the good of other people, then, this whole N-lover thing or Mexican lover, there's such a resentment of, you know, idiot white people, the lower educated racist white people, to really resent that. It's almost as if, you know, you're a spy and you're even less trustworthy than the people that you're trying to support.
Yeah, you're a traitor to your race. Well, it is, and the whole phenomenon really relies on racism. If you accept as your defining principle white supremacy, if you like, and I talk a lot about the Confederate soldiers in the Civil War, because I don't know that most Americans realize that the vast majority of those who fought and died for the South in the Civil War didn't own slaves. Three-quarters of white people didn't own slaves. And, in fact, the richest slave owners didn't even have to fight in the Civil War. They had something called the 20 Negro Law, which said if you were a big plantation slaveholder, today's billionaire, and you had 20 slaves, you had to sit at home in your plantation and watch your slaves. So you got to continue your business, continue your farming, continue to use your slave labor, while the poor white guys who didn't own slaves fought and died in the nation's bloodiest war. What did they die for? They didn't die for their right to own people. They died for the right of other people to own people.
Yeah.
They died for the right to say that our lives are miserable, but they're better than the poor black slave who is, you know, lynched and brutally mistreated and beaten. And it's if they're the second lowest rung of society, instead of trying to help everyone do better, they're going to attack the one rung of society lower than they are because it makes them feel good. And what's fascinating is I hate never fed anybody. Hate never gave anybody a job. Hate never gave anybody an education. And I look at, and I'm sorry to say this, but I keep looking at Germany in the 1930s. And I think about the very difficult economic times that Germans faced. It was after World War I. The French had punitive measures after World War I. There was hyperinflation. It was tough. And rather than try to make their own lives better, they said, aha, we're going to blame the Jews. We're going to find a scapegoat, blame them, focus our hate and anger on them rather than on improving our lives. And, of course, by the end of World War II, Germany was even worse off than it was. It is effective. It's effective emotionally. But it's not effective economically. And when people say that you're a traitor to your race, what they're really saying is, how dare you believe in the American dream for everyone? We all know the American dream is just for white people who are born here. Men should get paid more than women. We can't trust Mexicans or Muslims or black people. I mean, it's this real racist mentality. And then, and I find this amazing, when you say, as Hillary Clinton said, that Donald Trump is reaching out to these people, to these deplorable people who are racist and homophobic and sexist,
right.
Then she's criticized. How dare you call me racist? As if being racist were not as bad as being called racist. What's that?
Yeah, when you call it out, it's a horrible sin. And so,
how dare you?
All of a sudden she becomes deplorable and racist.
How dare you call people who are racist racist? Now, I'm not saying all Donald Trump supporters are racist, and neither is she. I said on
but
TV...
they're supporting it, but they will be supporting racism if they vote for him.
Well,
and
that's right.
That's the problem.
At the very least, they are unconcerned about racism. So some are pure racists, and some who say, well, but the other things Donald Trump supports make me want to overlook my racism. And the irony is I can't think of what those are. I mean, if you're a billionaire, you're going to get a tax cut, and you say, well, I'm making $1 billion a year, and next year I can make, you know, $2 billion a year because of Donald Trump, and I don't care if he's racist. I guess that makes some sense. But the vast majority of his supporters, they're not billionaires. These are people struggling to get by.
People,
he's going to make them worse off.
History.
Right.
Yes, and he's not, and those millionaires are not looking at history because under Democrats, they do better.
Well, everyone does better under Democrats. Rich people do better.
Yes.
Poor people do better. Middle-class people do better. The stock market does better. Unemployment goes down. It's amazing because our economy right now gave more income to the person in the middle, the medium wage worker. They had a greater increase last year than any time in American history. Our good days are rivaling the other time when we had really good days, when a certain other Clinton was president of the United States. That's how good the times are. We are getting back to the 1990s. And yeah, we had eight years of bad times because of George Bush.
That's it.
Right.
And people won't admit that. It's like, you know, really, truly, when you say, but President Obama had to dig us out of this horrible abyss first and then go on an upward trajectory, but they don't want to see that. It's just like, oh, there you go again, blaming Bush. Well, yeah, I'm blaming Bush. He should be in The Hague, and he should be elsewhere, that, you know, suffering for the damage he has done to our country.
We could say it was objectively the single worst economic recession since the Great Depression. And, you know,
I
there's nothing wrong with calling it the Bush Depression. After all, it was his unwillingness to, frankly, regulate financial services companies. And now Donald Trump is already in the debate. One of the few points he made that wasn't just vitriol was saying, I want to cut regulation because I want more people to pollute our air and water and because I want more banks to cause our whole economy to collapse. I mean, when you take away regulation, who does he want to regulate? He wants to regulate very poor black people in the inner cities who might use marijuana, right? That's law and order. He wants stop and frisk. But you know what stop and frisk is? It's not even punishing people that have committed crimes. That's not what stop and frisk is.
No,
stop and frisk is stopping all the brown people and seeing if they can find some excuse. The 90% of them are completely innocent. So instead of he wants to reduce those strictures on those billionaires that just want to pollute our air and water and ruin our financial system, he wants to let them do that more while we concentrate police energy on people that are doing nothing wrong but being brown.
Freaking idiot.
And I think what he really wants is the title. He wants his dictator or, you know, whatever title. And he does expect Pence to actually be the president without the name, of course. And Pence is terrifying. He said that Cheney is his role model as a good vice president. And he's absolutely right. That would be his role model under Trump.
You know what's
and
interesting?
That's a lot. We'll end up with Halliburton War again, you know?
We're going to have a debate. And I don't know how many people will watch. Most people don't watch the vice presidential debate. It's going to be this next Tuesday between my United States Senator Tim Kaine, Virginia, and Mike Pence. And I hope people do watch because Mike Pence, he's a terribly homophobic person. He'd probably do more harm to LGBT community than anyone running for vice president. You're right about his love of Dick Cheney's policies. I hope people do watch that debate because given the extent that Donald Trump doesn't really care much about policy, he may well be putting a lot of this in Mike Pence's hands, and we have a right to know who our real president is. Hey, thanks for your call, Bernice.
And that's going to be him.
It is. It'll be interesting. Thanks for your call, Bernice. I appreciate it. Folks, if you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. We'll be right back.
Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Talking about your favorite part of the debate last night. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. It's actually true. It's Monday night. All right, fair enough. Monday night. I'm still reliving it as if it were last night. Let's go to Tom in North Carolina on line three. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good, Mark. I've been listening. Most of all the callers, I think, agree with you up and down. You know, I hope you don't mind if I disagree.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, well, I wanted to just get on with Russia a little bit. But first, when you've been hammering, Trump with his taxes.
Yeah.
And I had a thought, is Trump doing anything illegal by not coming forth with his taxes?
No, it is not illegal under current law to not release your taxes, although he did violate tax law when he paid money that some consider to be a bribe to the Florida Attorney General to cut her investigation into Trump University. That was considered a violation of tax law for which he was fined by the IRS. But no, it is not illegal not to release your tax returns. I think it's wrong. You're welcome to disagree.
Okay, and they brought that up and stuff, but I thought it was curious that they didn't bring up, for instance, stuff that, Hillary did that was illegal.
Nope, there's nothing
like
Hillary's done that's illegal. There's nothing Hillary's done that's illegal. Not a thing.
What about the deleting, after she was subpoenaed, after, then 33,000 emails went missing?
Perfectly legal
they
because...
were deleted.
No, it's perfectly legal. It's perfectly legal because...
Totally legal?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. She was subpoenaed for her work-related emails. Her personal emails were deleted. And frankly, if they think she does something illegal, they can hold her in contempt, and that would be the way to do it. No one has sought to do that. So there's nothing she has done that broke the law. You may disagree with it, but she didn't break the law.
Okay.
All right. Real quick on Russia, though, because I want to get some of my other callers, too. Real quick.
Okay, Russia. I think you got the whole spin on Russia all wrong. 2 years ago, we went into the Ukraine and toppled a democratically elected government.
We?
With our NGOs.
What?
Yes, we did it. And
what are you talking about?
We've been doing for 50, 60 years.
No.
We've been regime changed. That's just what we did.
No.
We, Tom,
I don't know what alternate reality you're living in, but I'll just tell you quickly, and then we got to move on to another caller. The government of Ukraine impeached their president. The impeachment vote, by the way, was unanimous, including every single member of the president's own party and all the members of every opposition party unanimously said this guy can no longer be president anymore. Russia didn't like that because that was Russia's puppet, and that's why they invaded Ukraine. But the United States didn't do any of that. Let me move on to the next caller. We got Rose in Phoenix, line two. Hey, Rose, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. How are you, Mr. Levine?
I'm good. What were your thoughts? What were your favorite parts about the debate?
What actually struck me, because I am a Hillary supporter, however, I don't want to compartmentalize Trump and judge him. I still want to see him as the full possibility he is as well. But what really struck me the hardest is when he said he did not pay his former employee
yeah.
due to the fact he thought he didn't do a good job. So under a Trump administration, would that allow employers to just, you know, not pay their employees if they think they're not doing a good job?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Trump seems to go by what you might call billionaire rules. He hired people to, as Hillary pointed out, hired people like architects to design his Trump Tower and then moved in, let people live there, and then just not pay them. And it was interesting, and he basically implied that maybe his architect didn't do a good job. On one of the news programs, and I forget which one it is, but you could probably Google it and find it, they actually show a letter from that architect where he goes on, and you know Donald Trump is pretty good at being effusive when he wants to be, praising the terrific, excellent, incredible work of this architect that he ended up not paying. And look, we've all had workers, employees, people who don't do a good job for us. You can imagine one or two or three people in our lives that we haven't paid because they didn't do a good job. Trump has 3,500 lawsuits. And that's just the lawsuits. A lot of people, when they don't get paid by Donald Trump, I'm sure walk away and say, you know what, this billionaire is not going to pay me. It's going to cost me $100,000 to bring a lawsuit. I'm not going to bring a lawsuit. In fact, my guess is that most people don't bring a lawsuit when they're not paid. So if only one-tenth of the people who bring a lawsuit when they're not paid are being you know, bringing that lawsuit, then he stiffed 35,000 people. And that's just not normal. I don't think that all these people did terrible work. If they did, I think his buildings would be falling to the ground. So it's a really concerning thing. And what did he say when Hillary said that to him? He said, well, that's smart business. That's good practice. That just shows he's smart. He can get away with stealing from people, so he's happy with it. And that, frankly, tells me that we need to regulate people like Donald Trump more. And so you don't need to let him be president.
I agree. And may I ask you one more question?
Sure.
I have family members who would like to vote for Hillary, but they have been hell-bent their entire life on voting for the candidate that most supports Israel.
Mm-hmm.
How can I defend Hillary in terms of her support for Israel against well-knowledged family members?
I think Hillary
supports Israel more than Hillary does.
Yeah, I think Hillary will be a very strong supporter of Israel, actually. I think that if you look at, and you have to read between the lines, but you look at where she disagreed with President Obama with regard to Israel, you'll find that she was actually nicer to Israel than President Obama was. He was tougher on them. And you could go back and just look Google articles from 2009, 2010 and show them that she disagreed. She thought that Obama was being too rough on Israel, actually. And also, I don't think Donald Trump, this is a guy who really doesn't care about foreign policy. At one point, he even said we have to be even-handed between Israel and, let's face it, the terrorist groups like Hamas that control Gaza. He wanted to be even-handed. I'm all for, personally, a two-state solution, but I don't think we need to be even-handed between Israel and terrorist groups. So I think she'll be just fine. Bill Clinton was pretty good to Israel. I think Israelis agree on that. And you know, he almost got Camp David. In fact, many people remember he presented the Palestinians with basically a full state that unfortunately Yasser Arafat rejected. So I think she'll be fine on Israel. I really do. But look up where she differed with Obama, and you will see that she was stronger on Israel than President Obama. Check that out and share that with your relatives, all right? Appreciate your call. Let me go real quick because we don't have a lot of time to Dave in Virginia, line 5. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Yeah, how you doing, Mark? This is Dave.
I'm good.
I think there's a lot to be learned. This is about the debate again from the last debate and what Hillary may be able to do, studying the tapes like a football team would, to see what his weakest links are, his emotional breakdown points, because he kind of held it together for the first 30 minutes. Everyone thought, oh, gosh, maybe he's being presidential. And then it broke down after that because some of the key stances and her presence and her tone and the way she delivered based on her experience. So what I would do if I was Hillary is look at those weak links, you know, where he breaks out, where his skin is shown to be so thin, and really hammer those again with
I'll tell you, where
she becomes the moderator.
Absolutely, and she should keep doing that. And I think she did really well with talking about the difference between her father and his father, that it's okay to have a rich father, but you can't claim to have come up from nothing when your dad's given you a $14 million loan. And she talked about her dad, the drapery salesman, and how someone like her dad wouldn't have been paid by Donald Trump. I thought that was very effective, and I think that really got under his skin. So I actually think she did a pretty good job of getting under his skin. I'm sure she'll do more. I'm really looking forward to the next debate, the town hall format, because I don't think real people want a lot of this back and forth. I think they want solutions, and he doesn't have any. But don't miss the vice presidential debate. That's on October 4th. We'll find out about Mike Pence and Tim Kaine. This is Mark Levine. I'm sorry to get to all your calls. My time is up. See you on Monday.